was a song that was written when back in the days of the United Irishmen, and when they were going to raid, you know, or do pull something off illegally at the time, on the ritual, they would go and play this tune, and the fellows would know where to meet. So it's one of the old, it's a kind song, you know, this kind of thing. So what would you like to say? Or,
what we were interested in, you know, in terms of the project being
the fiddle became a very handy instrument, because first of all, it was very hard to get the pipes, you know, and then when the pipes came into being, the fiddle players would gravitate towards pipers. They'd like to play with pipers because the pipes seemed to hold on to the nya, as they call it in Ireland, the nya of the music, that, you know, the inflex, that, you know, the particular sound that the pipe has, like the bottom crayon and the slurring notes. And the fiddle, of course, you can draw a long note, you see, and that's what the pipes can do because of the wind, the peculiarity of the instrument being a wind instrument. You can hold a long note. Well, the fiddle can do the same thing, you know, this long note. And that's what's called the nota fada, the long note in Gaelic. And that's one of the peculiarities of Irish music, or Celtic tradition of music, is that long note. So the fiddle players would always like to get along, and the fiddle and the pipes are very compatible. That the fiddle, the pipes, and the flute, and they have brought in some like modern instruments, like now the Greek bouzouki has come into its own and playing.
Really?
Right. That's very compatible with it also.
Yeah. You,
right.
There's something about the whole connection there between the Gaelic and the Balkan.
Right. Now that the fiddle is very compatible because it just fits beautifully into the thing, particularly with the Éilean pipes. Not so, you know, it would not fit in with the war pipes or the big Highland bagpipes. Not because I'm saying that, you know, in a controversial way, but just that it does, they just marry into each other, the fiddle and the pipes, the Éilean pipes, and the flute are just great. They go together like, you know, bread and butter. You know, just they're great to see, and naturally, like, you know, so they like to play together. And of course, up until the last few years, there weren't that many pipe players around, so fiddle players would like to get with them, you know, and play with these people. And I've always felt, and also the peculiarities of the Éilean pipes retains the real essence of the old Gaelic music, you know, it has it. And so therefore, you'll find that fiddle players and pipers really seem to hit it off pretty good, you know, when they're playing the music.
And so the fiddle player's technique would be influenced by what they're hearing from the pipers.
Oh, sure, and particularly, and also flute players are very much wood, particularly the wood flute, you know, is very influenced by what pipers do, and which makes the sort of the Éilean pipes are. I don't think I'd be stretching it too far to say that the Éilean pipes more or less have took over after the harp sort of died out. The harp was a national instrument, you see, and it still is the symbol of Ireland, the harp, a musical symbol, and so the Éilean pipes more or less are continuing that tradition, and so therefore it's
in a more modern way,
right? And of course, the advantage of the pipes is that it does have the drones and the regulators to give you the chords, you know. So this is
right.
But usually, when you go to these like Ballasadair, the festival of Ballasadair, or Listinvarna, or the Flaup and Bundoran and Donegal, you know, and they hold festivals and flas all over Ireland through the months, the summer months especially, and they'd hold them inside in the winter, but they're really great, and the enthusiasm is great. In fact, it's the over enthusiastic something, but it's really great. But it's great to be there and to see that. And, you know, you have great fiddle players, and like Paddy Glacken will play with Liam O'Gorflin. Liam O'Gorflin is probably one of the. I met him in Ann Arbor in 1970 with a fellow by the name of Pat Skye, and I don't think Liam would remember me now, but I just went up there for a ride, and here Liam was playing at a place called the Ark. And I recently heard him play in London in a place there with Paddy Glacken a year or two ago, so long. And they just work beautifully together, Glacken and Flynn, and there's this Paddy Keenan, there's another great piper who also plays, you know, with a fiddle player. And Matt Malloy, who's part of that group, I met him once in Ann Arbor when he was with the Bathy band one time, you know. He was playing in the Ark there, and his flute and the fiddle player that they had with them there, I think his name was Peoples, I'm not sure enough. Yeah, Peoples. They just were great, you know, the fiddle and the gluing pipes together.
So are there a lot of people like taking up the pipes then and on that?
Well, there has been a sort of a resurgence of pipe, and in fact, back where I'm from, there's a couple of lads I've been working with to bring them along the pipes, you know. They're still not really extremely popular, and the reason they're not is because of the difficulty to get reeds. Reeds are probably one of the most, you know, if you don't make your own reeds, you know, or if you don't have somebody making reeds for it, like I have one man in Wexford who's helped me out with reeds, a great guy, and another man in Gorey who sent me some reeds, and Johnny Lacey, great man, and I've also had a little bit of help from Dan Dowd, and also Leon Rowson has been very kind in that way.
But they're very difficult to get away.
Because they're all in Ireland, and the man, the guy here who is, there's a man here making pipes. In fact, these pipes were made by this man.
Yeah.
His name is an American man. His name is David Quinn in Middlebury, Vermont. And he's doing the best work on pipes that I know of.
Does he make reeds as well?
He makes reeds. And there's one other young lad in his name is Timothy Britton, Tim Britton in Philadelphia, who's coming along as a nice pipe maker
so
also.
These are both young
men, and they're, and it's great to see these kind of people involved in it, you know.
Oh,
good, good quality, very good quality. American guys are doing nice work on the pipes.
Hmm.
Both Timmy Britton and Dave Quinn are doing very good work on the pipes. Their instruments are well turned and all that kind of stuff, you know. So there is some people doing good stuff. And there are some people making fiddles in Ireland, but I'm not too well up on who's making it. There's one man, I think his name is John McKenzie. And he is a teacher in the School of Music in Limerick in Ireland. And he makes fiddles, good fiddles, I understand, you know. He was a friend of my father's back in the School of Music in Dublin. And that's where I started on the Island Pipes with Leo Rowson.
Mm-hmm.
And I met a few of the old timers over there, like, you know. And a good friend of mine, Sean Seary, who was another good piper in Dublin. My father was a good friend of his father, who started working with Coltus, Kiltory and Aherin. And so, and the McKenna's in Thomas Street are another good piping family, and I think there's a couple of fiddle players there.
So it tends to go.
Yes, it does. The McKenna's are a big family. Joe McKenna and his wife Antoinette play the harp and pipes in there. And he's got another brother that plays pipes, so there is a sort of a family thing there.
Mm.
So there's, it's like you say, a family thing, more or less. Chanter itself has two octaves on it, which is peculiar to the Illyn pipes, the Highland bagpipes only has one octave, and the Illyn pipe chanter is held on down on the leg, and I have a piece of leather called a popping strap under the chanter, so I can pinch the bag. Now, what I mean by pinch the bag is I have the bellows under my right arm and the bag under my left, and I pump the air into this reservoir bag under my left arm. When I have that bag fairly well filled up, I can then go up the first octave, and if I press a little hard, then the reed in the chanter will kind of pinch together and give me a second octave. Mm. Now,
so that's controlled from with the combination of
with the combination of the bellows, with the combination of my right there's a peculiar situation about this. You have to learn to play the bag and the bellows, because if you are pump up the bag and you keep pumping it up and over pump up the bag, your drones will fluctuate, go up and down. It's something that you have to be careful of. You have to learn to play the bellows and bag in order to not to get, you know, too much wobbling up and down in your drones. Mm. In other words, you have to have a nice balanced feel with the regulators or with the bag and bellows. Now that will give you, like I say, the second octave. Yes. And I don't have an F key on this. I do have a C key here on the back of my chanter, but there are 4, 5, 6 keys can be added to. To the chanter, which gives you extra notes, like half notes and stuff like that.
Really?
And they also, of course, pardon?
This one is just straight.
Yes, right here. It's going right up the scale of the chanter, showing you that I can get the two octaves. And then there are the three drones. The large one down here is the bass drone. And then there's the baritone drone, the middle drone, and then the small tenor drone. Now they have quills in them, what we call quills, like, you know, they're like little tubes of cane, and they're slotted, and those are the drones. The regulators have double reeds, like oboe reeds, comparable to oboe reeds, and of course they're very susceptible to damage. You have to be very careful in putting them in and out in your instrument, or you'll break them, and then you're in trouble. Of course, the Illyn pipes are very susceptible to the weather, mm-hmm. particularly in the United States in the hotter climates.
Right.
Like it gets very hot, and it gets hot here in St. Louis, and it gets very hot. And I played about in Phoenix, Arizona here last year, and they closed up on me. So you're always playing the Illyn pipes is a very humiliating experience, a very humbling experience, because sometimes you're out really want to do a great job, and you find that your reeds are closed up and they won't work, and this can lead to a lot of frustration.
Are those drones tunable then?
Oh yes, I can adjust them up and down to the chanter. But like I say, you know, with the heat and the humidity and that, it's very hard to keep them. You have to adjust them constantly, like, you know. And it makes them very difficult.
They adjust by sliding in and out? Or?
Yes, I slide them up and down. The drone fits over another small cylinder, chantering. It's almost like a trombone. You know how a trombone slides up and down, you get the notes. Well, it's like a trombone effect on the drones. They slide backwards and forwards. And to sharpen, of course, the drones, you bring them closer up.
Right.
And in order to flatten them, you lengthen them out again.
Right.
Now, the regulators are sharpened, or flattened and sharpened, by inserting a rush. They use a rush in Ireland that goes alongside the river. And you attach the rush to a small piece of metal, which is inside the regulator. And then you can push it up and down by adjusting these little ends here. You see these little bulbs on the end, and can push them up and down. And that's how that's done. Now, the main idea is to get a good chanter read. A good chanter read is the key to the whole thing. If you don't have a good chanter read, then it's ridiculous to tune your pipes at all. So you must get a good chanter read, which has a good sounding bottom D, and a nice and a top D that doesn't break on it, which is nice and clear. And you try to keep that. Now, in this chanter here, by the way, this happens to be a Ginsberg chanter, and it was made in London by a man.
I see the chanter is
right.
Yeah, I was noticing that.
Right. This is a Blackwood chanter, and it's got a good tone to it. It's got a nice
sound.
No, it's not an old. I just got it over there. A young man picked it up for me from Mr. Ginsberg in 1977. Brought it back to me. And I just happened to have it here because the other chanter that I had didn't hold up in the heat here, and I had to have a spare chanter. That's why I'm using this. That's part of the situation. And the rest of the pipes, the stock is made out of maple, and then this is in the South American Brazilian wood for the regulators and the drones that I'm using. And of course, these are all brass. It's all brass fittings with good springs on them underneath to push the regulators back up again. So it's a very well made set of pipes, and Dave Quinn did an excellent job on putting them together. So, but that's part of the like I say, the big problem with the Ealing pipes is keeping the reeds and trying to keep reeds in them and working on them. And of course, if it wasn't for some of the people back in Ireland who give us a hand getting reeds and stuff like that, we just would be out of business, because there aren't enough people here in the States, and usually in the States the distance is so great to travel to meet somebody that can do some work on them or something, it's almost impossible to keep your pipes up, you know. So when we meet, we're always delighted to meet a fiddle player, even I'm, you know, or somebody else, you know, who wants to play with you, like Johnny McGreevy, who's here at the festival with me, and Mike Rafferty. They're both two great. Rafferty plays the flute, and Johnny McGreevy plays the fiddle, and he's a great old fiddle player. He's been responsible for starting many people in Chicago on the fiddle, and I believe it was his name, Miles Krasner, and a whole bunch of these people who play fiddle have gone and seen this man, you know. But Johnny is a great guy on the fiddle, and like I say, it's a pleasure to play with him here in St. Louis. And like I say, it's not that often that you do come across a fiddle player who plays traditional Irish music. And for us both to get together, it's just great. Now, there are many, many American fiddle players. There's lots of American fiddle players here. But their music, although it has some similarities between our music, like the Irish traditional music, it has, and I'm sure that was the basis for all of the American music. Yeah. It's always great to meet a man who specializes in, you know, like one Frenchman up here in Montreal, Jean Carignan, is an excellent fiddle player. I played with him up Mariposa one time, and he's a great man, and great, and a lovely fiddle player, just he's great. Yeah, there was a whole crowd of the fiddle players up there, so we didn't get much chance to, you know, and I was just one of the crowd of people hanging around. But he's a great man and a great fiddle player, and does a great job.
And the music you're playing with him
was Irish style. Oh yeah, he plays Irish style, yeah. So I've seen Ollie Bain of the Boys a lot. He's another great fiddle player, and he can play with the pipers, and I'm sure he has. He understands traditional Irish music very well. Of course, he's from the Orkney Islands, and he should. And he's a great fiddle player. So it's great to meet these kind of people. You know. Those are two hornpipes. One was called a fairy hornpipe, as in Irish fairies, you know, and the other was I can't remember what the other one was. Got us from, I think I heard some poker play it in Waterford, I'm not sure. Ryan Moran, I think I heard him play it. Hmm. He's a pretty young fella there that plays pipes there.
Maybe you could talk for a minute about those terms you're using for, like, the nyah
and the... Oh, okay. Well, the nyah is, you know, is used by traditional musicians when they like to hear that, you know, get that kind of sort of a maybe, if you like to call it in American, a sort of gutsy feeling into it. Like the stomach feeling, the soul feeling of Irish music. That's what the pipes bring into it, I think. And people and fiddle players who get the nyah into it, or anybody who can use his instrument, I don't care what instrument, you, if you get that nyah into it, that's what's important. That's like the soul. It is actually Irish soul music, you know. And a lot of the young people just come on that lately to find out that that's really where it's at for them. You know, there's really, they can get into this themselves, as opposed to some of like the more modern kind of music. Now, and I'm not knocking the modern kind of music, I'm just saying that, you know, the Americans and the English are so good at the, you know, rock and stuff like that. They're so good at this, and they have gone so far in it that it's, you know, to compete with that kind of stuff is ridiculous. Yeah. So we have our own soul music, which is this Celtic traditional music. Like, and some of the tunes go back to old Celtic times, and they, you can tell these tunes that have this really soul feeling of the Celtic people, whether they're from the north of France, the Brehon country, or from Wales, or from Scotland, or from the Aran Islands, or County Clare, or Donegal, no matter where they're from in Ireland, it has this nyah, this particular nyah, and they get that nyah in it from the shannos, the singing, the old singing, which the people sing over there, what they call the shannos kind of singing, which is also another...
Is it French? No, shannos.
It's a peculiar style of singing, peculiar to the old Irish in Ireland, and it's got a certain... the sound about it. It's got a peculiarities which relates to the Gaelic language, to the language itself, mm-hmm. you know, to the vloss of the, what they call, when you talk about the nya in the music, there's also the one of my old school teachers, the vloss of the Gaelic language, the softness of it, you know, how they speak it. Mm-hmm. And you used to have to go to the west of Ireland to get this.
The sound of the music is really related to the sound of the language.
Well, yes, and particularly the singing of the language. A lot of the tunes, when there was no pipes and the Irish were... When all their instruments were taken away from them, you know, and they just weren't allowed to play music at all. Because you know, you get to play music, you gather people around you, you draw people, and a crowd. You know, the crowds are eliminated. You can't have more than two or three people together. So and actually, there were no instruments. If they had, they were secreted away, hidden in the cabins and in the old cottages, or hidden somewhere in the trunks and underneath the floors and in the fireplaces, hidden away in stone recesses in these places, to be dragged out at a later age when we can get around to playing our music again. So this is the reason for that, you see. The people then sang, and the shannos singing in the language preserved a lot of the music. And then when the musicians were able to get their instruments back out again, they listened to the old singers and derived from the singers the old tunes. Right. This is one of the reasons why we're talking about the nyah, and the nyah comes from the singing, the shannos singing. And they say to the musician, put your own nyah into it there, you see, and that's what's important about this music.
To this, you know, like the term jazz, the swing.
You gotta have that swing to it, like, you know, and with black people in America, how, you know, how they have that feeling for it, that great feeling they have for their music. The black people seem to, you know, they love their jazz, and it's there, you know, they live it, you know, it comes from inside, and it's a gut feeling. Well, the same thing with this music of the traditional Celtic Irish music. This gut feeling you have for it, and this is where the nyah comes in, and that is derived from the shannos singing, and of course, like I say, this is important, and that's what saved it.
I'd say. Are there recordings of people doing it?
Oh yes, there is. Oh sure, there is. There's lots of shannos, not lots of them. There's like quite a number of good, both men and women shannos singers back in Ireland.
Do they sing all unaccompanied, or do they?
It's usually a cappella. Mm-hmm. Yes, sung. Unaccompanied, and that's the way to do shannos singing, right? You know, and
right. Individuals or groups.
Usually individuals. There are some people who might do it in groups, but it's usually by individuals singing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because you see, the shannos is peculiar to that person.
Right.
Like, you know, if they were from the west of Ireland, you know, that their approach might be a little different than somebody say from the north at the Gaelic, the north at around Donegal. Their approach to the shannos singing might be a little different, you know. But it's all shannos, and this is what I would say saved the traditional Irish music, you know, because there weren't too many. If there were instruments around, they were hidden away, you know. So.
What period of time?
Well, the when the penal laws, that era of the penal laws in Ireland, when See, that's why the bagpipes, the Highland, the Peeb Moor, the big pipes were forbidden in Ireland. You couldn't play the big pipes because this is forbidden by the penal laws. That was a symbol of their culture, you know, the big pipes, and these were forbidden. And we were even forbidden to speak the language, and, you know. So, and those were the times, more or less, that these things happened. And who knows, like, you know, what, you know, the attitude was, and what pressures and what the peculiarities of the situation were. You know, hundreds of years later, it's hard to figure out. But those are the facts. They did. It did happen. So I say in the 17th century, it was the big period of this. And this is when Ireland was always referred to as a woman. The names of some of the tunes are always women, like, you know. And Ireland was always referred to as a woman. The poor Shan Ban Buch, the old poor woman, and Caoimh na Gaoire, and all these, Ní Sula Oin, and all these names were put on Ireland because, you know, they couldn't talk about it. So they would give Ireland the name of a woman, and then this, they were able to get by with this, you see.
I see, right. Yeah.
Okay, I'll play an air dance. Caoimh na Gaoire, which is another name for Ireland, you know. Really, it's I suppose symbolic of the love that the Irishman has for his homeland. You know. So
yeah, I noticed you were doing some things with the fingers there, easing off of the holes.
Right, I was kind of slurring the notes. I don't have a key on the bottom of this chance to get that. I needed to get an F note there that I just didn't. Couldn't get on it, but so I'm slurring the notes, and sort of getting, squeezing them out more or less.
Right.
They were called slurring the notes.
Uh-huh. Cause, also the
tremolo, I was saying, you know, yeah, right. And in airs, like, you know, you won't use triplets or grips or, you know, or grace notes and stuff like that. And, too much anyway. I've used a couple of them. Maybe you shouldn't do it, but I mean, I suppose.
Detracts?
Well, yeah. I wouldn't say detracts. Oh, no, it's great to be able to do it. I think, you know, I'm probably not able to do all of that. You know, some fellas, like, I have to work here, and I have to work for a living, and the only time I get to play pipes is when I come home and work, if I, you know, feel in the mood to play and can tune them up and get them in half a decent shape. most of the other pipers that I just mentioned, they're all, you might say, professional pipers. They're playing all the time. Not alone that they're in Ireland, where they're, you know, the relativity of Irish music is more, you know, it's right there for them. They can go right there and get it, and they can travel all over these festivals and then go there. I mean, just to come here, it's a, what, 600-700 mile trip from Detroit, 600-700 miles, twice the length of Ireland, to get here to play a few tunes, you know. And there's, and you know, and would love to meet another piper. There's none around here that I know. There might be one, but he's
not.
Do
you play with people in Detroit? Do you play?
I do. I play with a group called Pat's People, who, by the way, did play in Los Angeles. And
really?
They have a, not as a program, they have a new record out, and I'm on the record with them. I've never been on record before with them, but we Pat's People now. And they're originally from Belfast. Ray McGuire, Wallace Hood, and Frank Kennedy. And they played at a place out there, Shaughnessy's, is it?
Oh, right.
Right.
Yeah,
they were out there a couple of years ago and did several, made a couple of trips out there. And they're really very good. They've gone from what they used to do more into the traditional line now of playing. And Wallace Hood, Ray has since acquired a flute and is doing very well on a wood Irish flute. And Wallace has got himself a citron or a bouzouki, made by a fella here in Chicago, Dave Weidman, I think his name is. He does an excellent job.
Now, is that just a direct borrowing from the Greek instrument, or is it?
Yes, it is, because it has a little bit. The bouzouki is adaptable to Irish music, especially when what happens is the original Greek bouzouki has a rounded back like a mandolin. Well, the Irish way of doing it is they flatten. It's just straight back, flatten like a guitar, flatten the back to bring the instrument closer into the body, and it makes it much better for getting the quick. Triplets and notes that they have to use them in the Irish music, jigs, reels, and horn.
So that's kind of the same way that the banjo has been.
Yes, only the banjo now. The banjo is a good instrument, but the banjo to me is, to most Irish pipers, sort of loud. It comes on very strong. So banjo playing like sort of obliterates or goes over the top of like the fiddle or the pipes or the flute. There's more resonance and there's more of a bang off of it, you know. So it's a good instrument, but it's a bit loud, you know. It comes across over. So the bouzouki is a little softer in tone. Like it's like the mandolin is also a nice instrument to play, and I'd say mandolin and bouzouki are great. They would also fit into that, and citron the same thing would fit into this group here. Like the softer instruments sort of blend together, you know. Like the same thing now with a nice button accordion if it's played, well. And like there's one kid here I met. He was out there in Los Angeles. Says he was an Irish play out there here. I think it started there last month. Billy McComiskey from Brooklyn, New York, America. And he's excellent, absolutely excellent on the button accordion. Excellent player. And I thought he was as good as any I've seen around. And he's American, you know, an excellent player. This Billy McComiskey. I thought he was really good, you know.
Wow.
Yeah, he could really lash out those tones, yeah. So this the button accordion, but like I say, this bouzouki has adapted the Irish music by flattening the back. I think the first one that I ever heard playing was a fellow by the name of Donald Lunny, who's in Ireland. He's an excellent, absolutely good bouzouki player. He's all around good guitar singer, but he was the first one that I heard use the bouzouki to good effect in Irish traditional music. There may be more people, you know. But another instrument that I think fits in very well with the thing is the concertina.
Right.
And there's a fellow there in the west of Ireland, Noel Hill, who's excellent on that, you know. And, you know, fiddle player, I think, is Tony Lennon. They have a record out which is very good, too, for a blend of instruments like that, you know.
Yeah, another term you're using was the crayon.
Oh, crayon, that's the bottom note on the bottom of the chanter. You'll get that when you get this. That bottom hardy, you get a crayon, that's what they call it, a crayon. And that's one of the peculiarities of the pipes, the Indian pipes. Now you couldn't get that sound on the big pipes because the man with the big pipes has got his chanter out in the air like that, you see.
Right.
And he would not be able to stop his chanter unless he raises his knee up to get that. Whereas the Indian piper has that option of stopping the chanter and pulling it off his knee like this, you see. Which gives us, of course, then you can't march with the Ilian pipes either. You have to sit down to play them. This is another disadvantage. You know, people call and say, oh, we need a piper to play at a wedding. Well, I don't do that. Sit down. Well, how are you going to march out with a couple, you see?
You can't do that.
Or it's, you know, it'd be pretty hard. The pipes would be dragging on the ground. You see? So the Ilian pipes in that way are more or less for sitting down.
so that,
The music also,
you can't play military music.
Right. Well, they do play marches on. They play marches. Yeah. They play marches. Yeah.
Oh.
They play marches on the pipes. And, oh, sure they do. And of course, like I say, the instrument itself has a wide range of capabilities. You can do an awful lot with it. You know.
You think this is more versatile in terms of melody than the other pipes?
Oh no, there's no. That's not according to what you mean by melody. I mean, I don't mean that. You know, the Highland bagpipes, the Pete Moore, are the purest form of pipes. You know, my father plays them, so I'd better be careful what I say here.
Right.
You know, so I'm saying and they were played in Ireland. There was as many big pipe players in Ireland today even than there are in Scotland.
Mm-hmm.
The big pipes are still big in Ireland, and they've come back. They've made a great comeback. I'm just saying that the Illian pipes has two octaves, and there are certain tunes which are adapted more into the Illian pipes because of the fact that you can go into the higher octave.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in the P more, you're restricted, not restricted, but they have the music is written for the big pipes. Whereas with the Illian pipes, you could probably say even maybe some modern kind of music on it, like, you know.
Right.
You could play some modern songs, like, you know. Whereas you wouldn't do that with the big Highland pipes because it just wouldn't fit right. Now, there are some people. There's a man in Ontario, Canada, his name is Gordon Tuck, and he's the pipe major of the Grand McNish Pipe Band in St. Catharines, and another friend of mine, John Scott. And John Scott is an excellent Highland piper, and so is Gordon Tuck, and they're good friends. And this Gordon Tuck has made a couple of albums, and he's brought in, like other modern instruments.
Oh, yeah.
And made and blended these tunes, modern tunes that would only be played, say, by a Scottish ceilidh band, and blended them with the Highland pipes, and does an excellent job.
Mm.
So it can be done if you have somebody with, say, with this man Tuck's ability to know what to do with pipes. Then you can get a nice blend here. The pipes can be, adapted, blended. Right. And there's a man in France, the north of France. His name is Alan Stavell, and Alan Stavell is an excellent Highland piper. He also plays the Celtic harp, and he has been able to bring in like the biniou, the French biniou, and the musette to play with the big Highland pipes also.
Oh.
And he plays the drum, the bowron, which is an Irish thing, the goatskin drum, the one sort of, that is also another instrument used in this kind of music. And this Stavell has done this, and so there are some people around who have broken out with this kind of music. Now, of course, this has been going on since the late 60s, and it's all through the 70s. I don't know. I'm not back there in Europe, so I couldn't say if it is really tearing along or, really going great guns or what. I would hope it is.
Yeah.
They say, like, in Holland and Germany, they really love this kind of music, so, and that's great news to me.
I think they have certain appreciation for American folk music, too.
Oh, sure.
Sometimes more than you get out of here.
Sure. Well, see, of course, like I say, but the American folk music is a derivative of the Scots and Irish music. The Irish jigs and reels, many, many movies, like I've seen, John Wayne have, Irish tunes in them,
Sure. Yeah, well, the tunes that we've been recording from these fiddle players.
Sure. Like Miss McLeod's Reel is, and all this kind of stuff, and these, the Turkey in the Straw.
Mm-hmm.
These are all derivatives of Irish music because many of the people who came here went down south and went into the hills and played their fiddles and their concertinas and stuff like that, and brought them with them, and their mountain dulcimers, which is another instrument, which was formerly called a tin pan, which fits in with the music also. The tin pan, mountain dulcimer, or the hammer dulcimer, it fits into this kind of music also. It's those kind of instruments that come in. I would say the only thing that wouldn't do that, I think, doesn't, if you have an electrified instrument, once you plug in, you seemingly get away from the tradition that sort of gets. You have to make certain allowances here. If somebody knows how to play music or really wants to play Irish music and saxophone, great. It's not traditional though, but it's, let's face it, if that's what a man wants to do, great, So.
Maybe we get out of tune.
Okay.
You have to
Yeah, I have to be back at the festival. Thank you. Hornpipe. I think it's, I'm not sure. I think it's the Kingston, I'm not sure. That's, I think that's the name.
Kingston Hornpipe?
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, it is. It's nice. It's, I like it. It's an old hornpipe. It's nothing new about it. It's one of the, probably one of the first hornpipes I heard. It's like young fella playing pipes back in, I think I heard them. A man, the man that I, the first gave me the inspiration to go into the pipes was a man by the name of Martin Burke. And he lived off Dorset Street in Dublin. And my father used to, when I was 5 or 6 years old, he would take me up there on a Saturday night, and we'd go up there to talk to Martin Burke. He was a reed maker and pipe maker, and we'd go up there, and it was, he lived in a little house, little block house, you know, house up there. And he had tapes of an old Irish piper who was American, really, a man by the name of Patsy Toohey. Patsy Toohey was a great American piper, and he played around the Boston, New York, Philadelphia, Chicago, this kind of thing. And he had these cylinders, you know, these wax cylinders that were made, and he had them wrapped in cotton wool, and he'd take them out and put them on the old cylinder round, you know. So you listen to this man here, and of course, Patsy Toohey was a great piper, from what I could hear anyway, of what I, you know, he was just marvelous, you know, and a great guy, you know. And that was, Martin Burke, anyway, was the first man to play these, you know, things when he'd have me sitting in there while they'd be talking, and I'd be sitting listening to the cylinders and all, and it would run off, and you'd have to come back in and put it back on, you know. But that's where I got, more or less, I felt that I got my inspiration to go into the pipe, and then I went over to play pipes, or to learn, or try to learn piping from Mr. Rowson, Leo Rowson, and Leo put up with me for a long time, and I'm still trying to learn how to play the pipes, to be honest with you, you know. Yeah, it takes years, you're always learning something, you know, and you're always trying to learn, you know, trying to improve yourself. But as I say, like, I put in a lot of time. I was 4 years in the service here, you know, and in that whole 4 years, I never did get a chance to get a set of pipes in my hand. And I just played them once in a great while. I never really got back into them again until I saw Liam Flynn played them back up. He probably didn't realize it at the time, but it's a strange thing. I just found out about Liam Flynn being in Arbor. He had played the Philadelphia Folk Festival, and he played it with this American guy, Pat Skye. And Pat Skye brought him to Ann Arbor. They were doing a bunch of gigs, you see. And somebody called me and says, Al, this good Irish piper's up here, this Liam O'Flynn. Now, Liam O'Flynn is probably, you know, one of the top 8 or 9 pipers in the country. There are a lot of good young Irish pipers in the country, but I'd say Liam Flynn and Keenan and Fury are the tops. Like, you know, these guys are the good, really good pipers. And so you're, like, talking about the Van Cleburns of the Irish Ealing pipes, you know. And these fellows are really, they're at it all the time. So Liam was a great, he didn't know it, of course. I just talked to him for a few minutes in a restaurant called the Brown Jug in Ann Arbor.
Yeah.
And then we went back to a friend of mine, his place, his apartment, and we talked. And then that night, Pat Skye and Liam O'Flynn did this concert at the Yark in Ann Arbor. This place is run by a fellow named Dave Zieglin. Mm-hmm. And Dave Zieglin is very, tries as much as he can to bring in folk music, both American and Irish and English and Scottish folk music. He's big on that, you know. And he does a great job bringing them. But anyway, this is where I saw Liam, and I kind of said to myself, well, I think it's about time you start getting back into the pipes again. There's not that many people. And there wasn't anybody for years here. I hadn't heard of anybody. And nobody. I heard from nobody. I didn't know anybody was playing. Nobody ever got in touch with me. I played in Chicago one time in 1955 for the Chicago Fesh, and I was never approached by anybody there about playing pipes or who played pipes. So I was on my own, and most of the piping that I've done since then has been just picked up from myself and from my father, who played Ealing pipes also. He used to play a flat set of pipes, and which is a longer chanter, which is the original Irish pipes. It was a long chanter, and they are about B-sharp, B-flat, or this, you know, they're a softer sound. And my father played those pipes. So most of the piping I learned or have picked up has been on my own, you know.
Well, usually when I've
gone back to Ireland several times, and I listen to the lads over there playing, like, you know, I've listened to, like, you know, the pipers there, Gallagher and Dan Dowden and several of the other pipers, and, you know, Sean Seary and Gabriel McKeown, who's a young Irish piper. I've had him stay at my home. It's right. Gabriel McKeown, and I had Sean Seary stay at home, and another man by the name of Peter Carberry, and who's a very nice man, and he's a good piper too. So I've listened to these people and their records, and, you know, assume and got the tunes from them, you know. So.
Do you have anyone in San Francisco?
Yes, there is a man in San Francisco. He was there. I think he's, the last I heard was that he had moved out of there, Dennis Brooks.
Oh, yeah.
and I heard it.